Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning, depending on where you're joining us from in the world, and welcome to today's webinar, Predicting Risk Using Technology and Quality Threats. My name is Amy. I'm a member of the marketing team here at Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety, Inc. I'll be facilitating today's webinar and offering technical support to our speakers. Today, we're excited to be welcoming back a familiar guest to discuss the topic at hand, and that's Tammy Van Buren of SQFI. We'll be introducing her to you all shortly. But all right, I am going to go ahead and introduce our moderator, so to say, for today's presentation, and that's Paul DeMarin. He is our Senior Vice President of Food Safety and Supply Chain. He joined PJFSI in January of 2020, and he has over 35 years of experience in the hospitality, service, and retail agri-food sectors. Paul is a board member of the OFPA, that's the Ontario Food Protection Association, and he's also an advisory council member with the George Washington University School of Business for their digital marketing certificate program. And before he came to PJFSI, Paul worked for 17 years in the certification industry with clients in sectors from food safety and supply chain to brand protection and quality. Paul's also worked for many years in management system certification. And before that, he was a professional chef and a consultant for over 20 years. So Paul, I will hand things over to you and you can take it away whenever you're ready.
Great. Thank you very much, Amy. Welcome everyone to our second last webinar of the season. I hope that all of our sessions and topics that we've delivered over the year have been beneficial and knowledgeable for you. Of course, we thank you very much for joining and giving us your time today. Today, I have the great pleasure of once again welcoming back Tammy Van Buren from SQF. We're going to be looking at an overview of different strategies to anticipate risks using the latest technology and technological advances in food industry. So just as we do that, let me introduce you to Tammy. She is the manager of compliance for SQFI since November of 2019. Her more recent prior positions were as quality manager and SQF practitioner for Treehouse Foods and D&W Fine Pack. Tammy has over 30 years of experience in quality control in the automotive and food industries. And she teaches classes in her spare time, which I don't know when that might be, Tammy, but preparing people to take the ASQ certified classes as quality engineers and technicians. So with that, I'll be interacting with Tammy throughout the session. But at this point, Tammy, I'll pass it over to you.
All right. Thanks, Paul. So we are going to get started and I'm going to advance the slides here. So predicting risk. So during your, process of your food safety system, how do you go about predicting risk? So I've got this cute, sweet little innocent duck here. You know, they're probably, you know, he's probably similar to a lot of your suppliers or your employees. They always do the right thing, right? They always follow those procedures and, just always looking out for food safety, for quality. And unfortunately, that is not always the case. So, you know, let's look at this duck a little bit closer there. So that duck is actually that deviation, that non-standard method. Maybe it's that supplier who doesn't follow procedures. We're gonna call him a non-conformance. So how do we take our data that's in written forms, or maybe it's stored in spreadsheets, and how do we understand it? How do we put it in perspective so that we can predict which duck is going to be the one that gets out of line? So that's really what we're looking for, always that one that's going to not do what he's expected to do. So let's look at how we can identify him using some technology. Okay, so as a brand owner, as I'm sure many of you on the call today are brand owners, you might have some goals that look very similar in blue there on the left. So maybe you're looking to build and protect that brand image. You know, maybe, you know, you're looking to avoid crisis. I know we are all looking to avoid crisis. And unfortunately, sometimes crisis kind of sneaks up on us. You know, it may be in the form of a pandemic, you know, something that we have no control over whatsoever, or maybe it's in the form of something we can control within our product, within our process. And then, you know, lastly, they're passing audits. You know, nobody ever has the goal of, you know, not passing. So we always want to, you know, put our best foot forward and pass those audits as they come to us. But there are many challenges that stand in our way. So you might see some unidentified, it refers to them as black sheep here, or those ducks that I mentioned among our suppliers. Maybe there's some emerging risks, some things that we had not considered that suddenly jump up. There are those anomalies or those new revenue streams, new products, new processes, new customers that come on board. And those are just some of the challenges that, you know, we're faced with. But then you have all these analytics moments that are built into that. So those opportunities where you could use some anomaly detection. Those risk-based audits, you know, when we're looking at whom or when or how or what, identifying those risk factors and being able to detect them and monitor them through the data that we're collecting. You know, root cause analysis, always very important. And then that performance measurement that, you know, we go through. So all kinds of challenges that, you know, get in the way of us, you know, identifying those risk hazards. So, you know, one of the things, an example I'll use, a certified site sent an air testing company to me to tell me what to for me to tell them what to test for in our new Edition 9 ambient air test requirement. And I explained to this testing company that the site had to identify those risks. And I couldn't do it for them because I am, you know, unfortunately not, you know, familiar with all 10,000 of our SQF sites. So it's really up to you as the brand owner to identify those risks, to determine what needs to be tested for when it comes to things like, you know, ambient air testing, when we throw that in the new Edition 9 of the SQF quality or food safety code. Okay, so I had come across this quote and I thought it was very true. You know, the goal is to turn data into information and information into insight. But I would just expand on that a little bit. So really the goal is to turn our data into using the right data to turn it into the right information that will then give us the right insight. And hopefully we do that before someone gets sick or is injured as a result of the food they eat. So that is why we want to predict risk. So, you know, how are we gonna do that?
Hey, Tammy, it's Paul here. So, you know, I work with a lot of organizations who collect all different types of data. You know, I guess, how do you suggest what they do to determine what the right data is?
Yeah, so, you know, I run into companies all the time that collect a lot of data. I mean, here at SQFI, we collect a lot of data too. We have all the data that's in ReposiTrak that, you know, is a result of the audits that you all are seeking. We collect data on recalls. We collect data on complaints and appeals. And, you know, we have lots of data, just as I'm sure many of you out there do. So when I look at what is the right data, you know, I always try to analyze my data to determine, is this something that I can use to take action on and to analyze? And so I'm looking at that. And if I can't answer yes to that question, then I really look at the data to determine if it's something that I need to be collecting. You know, is it something that maybe I can, automate a little bit? Or maybe is it something that I can eliminate altogether and it won't have an impact on my food safety program? And, you know, too many times, you know, I give the example of a company that I went into, and I was going to do statistical process control training, and just from refresher training, because they said, you know, we've been doing SPC for 20 years. And so they showed me a control chart that they were using. And the control chart was literally almost a straight line. And it had three different measurements on it. It was either zero or 0.5 or one. And so they had been collecting this data for 20 years, filling out these control charts. And I said, what are you using it for? Well, we don't really use it for anything. So then why are you doing that? So, you know, just really identify the right data, the data that you can take and transform it into something that is useful, that is actionable. So that's the right data. Don't keep, you know, keeping up with stuff that nobody ever uses. It's not required by a customer. You know, it's not required by regulatory. So find your right data.
Perfect. That's a great answer. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a little bit about some internal audits. So, and you may ask the question, now, Tammy, you're throwing this kind of in the middle here. You're talking about data. And I know you're going to talk about technology because that was in the title of the webinar. So why are we suddenly jumping into internal audits? So I do have a point to it, I promise. So this is some of the data that we collect, looking at our data that's coming out of ReposiTrak on all of the audits that get used. And so this is goes into a database. I download it into an Excel spreadsheet, and then I create all kinds of pivot tables. My manager, and I think she's listening today, Leanne, she calls me the pivot table queen because I'm literally in pivot tables every day looking at data because that's the method that I have. So I wanted to share some data with you, and then I'm going to tie it into something else out here soon. So internal audit by the numbers. So that's a non-conformance that we see sometimes for sites that don't have an internal audit program, or they get non-conformances to their internal audit program. And so last year in 2020, there were 653 minors written for internal audit. There were 11 majors. So, you know, I had the theory that, and again, it was just a theory because I had all this data and I hadn't really organized it. But I, you know, did some pivot tables and decided I'm going to look at the average scores of sites, and I'm going to compare those sites that did not get a non-conformance in internal audit. So they got a compliant mark in internal audit, and their average score was 95.27. So that was slightly above our overall average score for SQF. So we're running very close to 95 for our food safety audits. So those sites that did not get a non-conformance in internal audit scored a 95.27, just slightly above our average. Then I looked at those 653 sites that got a minor non-conformance in internal audit. So, you know, a minor is only worth 1 point. So how much does a minor in internal audit really impact a site's audit score? You might think 1 point, right? No, the average of those 653 sites was 89.82. So they dropped almost 5.5 points for those sites that received a minor in internal audit. And, you know, if you know what an internal audit is supposed to do, it's supposed to identify those issues that don't meet the standard or the requirements or the regulatory requirements. And it should identify those before your SQF auditor comes in and identifies them. So we saw a 5.5 point drop. So then I looked at those 11 sites that received a major non-conformance in internal audit, and what was their average score? So this was 8.1 addition data, so a major was 10 points. So you would think, okay, well, the maximum they're going to score is a 90. But when I look at their average scores, 64.27. So a site that received a major was more likely to fail their audit just by getting reflecting that major in internal audit. So it kind of makes sense, right? A major in internal audit, meaning you're probably not doing an internal audit, and your score is down 31 points from the average of a site that is compliant in internal audit. So quite a big difference there.
Yeah, Tammy, that's major swing. I mean, obviously 30 points is pretty large. And I think that's, you know, primarily due to the importance of internal audit. It's critical, right? It sets you up for your audit. It's essentially your check, in advance of an external audit. But, you know, what I guess would you say are some of the most common reasons for non-conformances as it relates to internal audits? And do you have any thoughts on maybe what they could be doing to improve that?
Yeah, absolutely. So internal audit, the number one reason for the non-conformance was that they just aren't doing them. So the majors would have been basically no internal audit program at all. The minors, you know, kind of centered around not doing a complete audit, or maybe not having done an internal audit for more than a year, because this is an annual requirement. So typically the major would be around just the lack of a program at all. And then the minors would be centered around an incomplete internal audit program. So, you know, you're required to use a checklist or some similar tool to the SQF code checklist. And, you know, perhaps they weren't using that, which then allowed them to skip certain sections because they weren't really checking off to make sure that they had covered the entire code. And so that's what we were seeing, is a lot of omissions or, you know, even shortcomings when it came to doing a complete internal audit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably, you know, unacceptable practice to not be doing. I mean, obviously from a standard perspective, yes, but, you know, just from a continuous improvement point of view, I see, Tammy, you know, a lot of companies who are very, very strong in these programs doing internal audits at least twice a year, sometimes more, but is there a number that you would recommend? Like, is it two per year, one per year? What would you recommend for these companies?
Yeah, so, you know, the requirement is at least annual. You have to cover the entire code. And so I think sites do really well at covering the GMP modules, you know, module 11, if you're to the, you know, food manufacturing code, those GMP modules. I think they do a really good job of inspecting the area. They're very strong in that. They'll do monthly inspections. They might even do something more frequent, like a weekly, or some sites even do like a daily inspection of GMPs. And they do really well on that side of things. It's mm-hmm. the system elements that I think where they fall down. So module two, so they sometimes forget that they need to be auditing management commitment and some of those other programs that fall under the system elements. So, you know, I just recommend the sites to get what works for you. So I always liked doing we did monthly GMP inspections at the last place where I worked, but then we did the full system audit one time a year, you know, and we treated it like it was an external audit. So I had an opening meeting and I had an audit team that was trained and that was auditing outside of their area of responsibility. And they would schedule times with the auditees. They would sit down and develop an audit plan. So I just would recommend to sites that regardless of what frequency you settle on, treat it like it were an external audit, and that your auditors are not employees of the company, and just take that perspective. And I think you do a great job of identifying those non-conformances just as if it were an external audit, for sure.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. So now I'm going to give you another example of some of the data that we collect, and I'm going to tie this into the internal audit data as well. Okay, so here I'm going to talk to you about desk audit elimination, and this is one of the ways that we use data at SQF. So one of the changes for edition 9 was we eliminated the requirement of a desk audit. And so I had some certification bodies, some auditors that were very upset about this. You know, we had gotten feedback from sites that said, yeah, we don't like the desk audit. We think it's a waste of time, waste of money. Can we get rid of it? And so that is kind of where, you know, we came up with the idea to eliminate the desk audit. And so after we did that, I had auditors and certification bodies that were very upset with me. You know, the complaint was that we are now setting sites up that are initially going for certification, we're setting them up for failure by eliminating the desk audit. So me being the data nerd that I am, I jumped in and I thought, I'm going to prove them wrong. I'm going to use the data to prove them wrong. So, you know, the code requires your practitioner to have an understanding of the SQF code and the requirements to implement and maintain an SQF system. So, you know, having a desk audit or not having a desk audit, you should still have implemented an SQF system. So I thought, you know, I'm going to dig into the data and I'm going to identify whether that's a valid excuse or not. So, you know, I don't know how many of you all watch the show Mythbusters, but I love that show where they, you know, seek out to destroy some of those myths. So this was a myth that I felt like was a myth, but I wanted to bust that myth up. So digging into my data, again, Excel spreadsheets. So I had everything out of, you know, ReposiTrak in Excel. So I started looking. We had 434 sites last year that were going for initial certification. And I looked at the non-conformances they had on their document audit versus the number of non-conformances they had on their on-site. And, you know, the argument that I was getting was that, oh, those are like the desk audit was like free non-conformances that they could fix before their on-site, and then they wouldn't get those non-conformances on their on-site. So you know, we've now taken that away from them. So when I looked, actually 47% of the sites had more non-conformances on their on-site audit than they had originally gotten on their document audit. Now, obviously, some of those, and largely a lot of those, would have been different non-conformances, but still, they had more on their on-site. And then 44% had less, 9% had about the same, or had the exact same. Then I looked at it by rating. So there were 26 sites that scored complies or fails on their on-site audit. And when I looked at the number of non-conformances, they averaged almost 25 on their document audit and almost 22 on their on-site audit. And then of the 277 sites that scored a good score, they averaged 11 non-conformances during their document audit and 9 during their on-site audit. And then we had 131 sites that scored excellent, and their average were 6 non-conformances during their document and almost 3 during the on-site audit. So looking at that data and then, you know, knowing what I know about, you know, what options are available to sites, I, you know, gave 3 reasons why that was not a valid argument for them to come up with. So number one, sites can still have a CB or a consultant to come do a pre-assessment to Edition 9 checklist. They can certainly do that. There are people out there that would come in and do a pre-assessment for you. So you could have essentially a document or a desk audit, you know, if you wanted. It just would not go through SQFI and be entered into our database. Number two, sites should utilize their internal audit to identify gaps anyway. So it's required that you do an internal audit. So sites should have done that internal audit to identify their gaps. And then number three, the numbers don't support it. So as you can see there by the data, sites who do well on their document audit tend to do well on their on-site audit and vice versa. So, you know, I feel like I was able to you know, bust that myth by looking at the data. Now, how long did it take me to get that data? It took me, you know, a few minutes, because I'm having to look at, you know, data that's in Excel spreadsheets, and I'm having to create pivot tables and, you know, look at it different ways. But I think I did, you know, a pretty good job of busting that myth that, you know, we're doing sites a disservice by eliminating the desk audit, because those that do well on the desk audit were doing well on the on-site audit anyway. So that's just one way that we use data to help determine, you know, and validate, if you will, changes to our own code and how, you know, that impacts our sites. So now I'm going to give you a case study that kind of ties those two, you know, data thoughts together. So I looked at a site that had went for initial certification. They had a document audit. They had 22 non-conformances. And one of those was to 11.2.13.1. So what they were written up for in their document audit was the procedure did not specify responsibility and methods used to verify effectiveness of their cleaning and sanitation program. So they were written up for their procedure in their document audit. Then the auditor came back on for their on-site, and this is one of those 47% of sites that actually had more non-conformances on their on-site audit. And so they had 26 non-conformances, which put them in a surveillance, as you'll see below. But they got another non-conformance to 11.2.13.1. The effectiveness of cleaning and sanitation program not completed as per the verification schedule. So after the doc audit, they corrected the procedure and identified the method to verify the effectiveness. Then when the auditor came on site, they didn't have records to show that they verified the effectiveness of the cleaning and sanitation program. So they got another non-conformance. And then 6 months later, the auditor came back for a surveillance, identified 10 more non-conformances, and then they got another one in 11.2.13.1, dust buildup on an air exhaust unit filter. So the first one was their procedure, the second one was their record of verification, and then the third non-conformance was for their practices. And so they still could not get 11.2.13.1 correct. Do I feel like that, you know, they would have done better without the document audit, or they would have been worse without the document audit? I don't think we can gather that from, you know, the fact that there was repeated issues. And there were repeated issues in actually six additional clauses as well. So again, I don't think that eliminating the document audit would have hurt this site in any way. And just to add to it, the site did receive a non-conformance and internal audit as well. And, you know, the evidence was no internal audit completed. So, again, one of those sites that, you know, having that internal audit, I think, would have been more of a benefit than, you know, having that desk audit. Because obviously having the document audit did not favorably impact their on-site or even their surveillance score necessarily. So just a case study. I wanted you guys to look at, you know, some of the ways that I look at data. You know, this is what I do on a regular basis, is look at data. So this will help me to explain how we use technology to do our identification and risk, because it would have been great if we had been able to, you know, get some of this information out. And we've actually done, you know, a webinar on the internal audit to try to, you know, encourage sites to do an adequate internal audit before their next SQF audit. Okay, So where are we at? So Riding the Technology Waves, Intact is an organization that we're working with on a technology program. And so they supplied this chart for me here, as well as some of the information I'm showing you today. So you know, the first wave of technology was not really technology, it was paper, right? Everybody, you know, just even just a few years ago, some of you may still be in this first wave of, we'll call it technology, but it's really non-technology, paper supported audits. So, you know, you're filling out records in paper format, you're turning them in, you're reviewing and everything in paper format. So that's the first wave of technology. Okay, there's a second wave of technology called digitally supported. So that's where most companies are right now. We're in that digital age. So, you know, we're using things like Excel. We're maybe still collecting data in paper format and then turning it in, and you know, somebody's keying it into a computer. So we are digital. Some, you know, people are using software programs, a lot of web-based software programs where they're collecting data through a computer. And so that's where most everybody is. SQFI is that little green dot in the orange, and I'll tell you why, because we're jumping on that next wave, and I've got some things to show you today to show where we're doing that. And then the third technology, which is, you know, where we're looking at heading, is AI supported audits, you know. And you know, you have to stay a step ahead. And so so we're, you know, looking at getting into that AI platform and starting to look at data a little bit differently. So for those of you that are not familiar with AI, you know, it's artificial intelligence. It's the data actually speaking to us and not us trying to analyze the data to solve our problems. So so we're gonna show you a little bit more about, you know, how we're gonna be using technology in the future using AI. And so I'm gonna give you a little insight today into what we're working on and how we're gonna do that.
Hey, Tammy, for the sites that are still working, you know, with the paper supported audit methodology, any thoughts on what they can do to get started in a digital space?
Absolutely. So I would just say, you know, start small. So maybe you are 100% paper today, but maybe you can start small. You know, maybe it's just buying a cord to hook up to a computer and having a pH meter that, you know, will automatically download the data. You know, start with one characteristic that you can do that with, or, you know, with, you know, smart technology today and tablets and things, you know, coming down in price. So, you can buy a tablet, you know, for $50, $70 nowadays that you could actually collect data on, that you could utilize digital data rather than, you know, handwriting information and filling out check sheets and things. So I would just encourage sites to start small. You don't have to jump straight from paper to AI, but you can just, you know, move in that digital direction, you know, by taking baby steps. And I think, you know, I think you'll get there eventually. It can be a challenge, especially, you know, because you've got to have knowledge, you've got to have technology that people are familiar with. There's got to be training involved. So again, I would just suggest starting small and working your way up, and then eventually, you know, you'll hopefully get there to where it's the data is working for you. Instead of you having to do, you know, so much work yourself. So, all right. So just to give you an idea, our current data structure here at SQFI, as I said, you know, we are transitioning into the AI phase, but, you know, we are very much in the digitally supported phase right now. We use databases, we use Excel spreadsheets. As I said, Leanne calls me the pivot table queen, because, you know, if you look at one of my Excel spreadsheets, I've got 20 tabs, and every tab has different pivot tables on it. So I can look at my data in, you know, every different way possible. So, but the idea behind that is to take this data and manipulate it into something that I can use. So, so pivot tables are my go-to. I'm going to give you guys just a brief introduction to pivot tables because they are just too important and too easy to use for you not to be using this method. So if you have Excel spreadsheet, you can use pivot tables, and it really will open up your ability to look at your data in lots of different ways. Okay, but our current data structure requires us to take a reactive approach to things. So we are notified of a recall or a complaint or a poor audit result, and then immediately we start, you know, doing things. We start looking at the audit report and reviewing it. We look at the corrective actions. We start monitoring the site for suspensions. We pull a site history to see, you know, where, you know, they've been historically with SQF. We notify the CB if they haven't notified us already, who then notifies the auditor. So there's lots of stuff that start going on, but unfortunately the process begins with something bad happening first. So, you know, something bad happens and then everything goes into motion. So we want to change that approach. So I am right now going to show you guys a little bit about, you know, what we do with our current data structure. And as I mentioned, the pivot tables are very useful for those of you that are in the digitally supported wave of technology. And so I just wanted to give you a little bit of an introduction. I got a couple slides here. What you're seeing here is one of my spreadsheets, and it's one of the pivot tables. I look at our audits by country. And so this is my year 2020 data. I filtered by 2020 because I wanted to look at 2020. I'm looking at just the food safety audits. And so I've filtered out everything but my food safety audits. And I'm looking at all of my CBs. Now, I use this filtering to be able to look at, you know, specific CBs if I wanted to. So so that's how I've got this set up. So, you know, how do you get started? I'm going to give you some tips here so that you can immediately start using pivot tables when we get done today, and you can go to work on that. So, you know, how do you get started? Put your data in column with headers, highlight your data, go up to the top, click Insert Pivot Table. Then it's going to allow you to open a pivot table on a new tab. Click on that pivot table and your field list there on the right will appear, and you just start checking those things that you want to see. So, you know, in this one, I'm looking at the audit, the CB, the country, and the year. And so those are the things that I have checked there. And then next, when you click on those things, Excel is going to drop it down into one of those four quadrants at the bottom. So you look in the bottom right, and it says filters, columns, rows, and values. And so it's going to drop things down into rows, but then you just grab them and drag them and move them around. So I wanted to filter by years, by audit type, and by CB. So I drug those up into my filters. I was looking at country, and then I wanted a count of those countries. So when I clicked on FAC underscore country, it automatically dropped it in my row. And then I went back up to the top, and I could grab FAC country a second time and drag it down to the values in the bottom. And it automatically set it up so that I could start getting a count. I can also expand that arrow at the bottom, and I can change it to sum and average and just a different thing. Standard deviation, I've got some set up for standard deviation as well. So lots of options there. So, So pivot table, so useful. So, you know, I'm just recommending, if you're in that digitally supported wave of technology, if you're not already using pivot tables, let me just make it a little bit easier for you and allow you to be able to, you know, manipulate your data and look at it in, you know, a nice organized way.
Tammy, are there any tools outside of Excel that you might recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, with our current data structure and the way it's set up, you know, Excel is primarily what I use, but, you know, we do have some databases set up. You know, Access is a good one. Our website platform allows us to set up a database through our website. So we collect data through our website. You know, for those of you that may have had an extension during the pandemic, that was requested through our website, and all that information goes into a database. So I don't have to, you know, collect that data, and then I can just take in and download it into Excel. We also use SurveyMonkey as well because, you know, number one, I can download it into Excel, or I can just stay in SurveyMonkey and it will actually create some charts and things that will help me to analyze the data also. So, yeah, you don't have to use Excel. There are some other things. There are lots of other platforms and things out there, web-based platforms that, you know, will allow you to collect data coming out of industry. You know, there was one particular company that we utilized for collecting all of our food safety and quality data. You know, we had computers and things out on the floor. So all of our, you know, data went into this platform. And, you know, we were about 98% paperless, you know, at one point, because we were able to funnel everything through that. So there are lots of options out there. And I would just encourage people to look and see. If you want to hear about some options, at the end here, I'm just going to tell you, I'm going to invite everybody to the SQF conference, which is coming up in person in Orlando, Florida in October. And we are so excited about it. And we always have vendors there that can help people with their digital needs and have some of those very same platforms that I talked about. So absolutely. Check that out if you haven't. But yeah, there are so many tools out there that are available to people to use. And you can always reach out if you have any questions. And I'll be glad to share anything that, you know, I've used in the past that might benefit people. Okay, now where are we headed? So I've given you an idea of our, you know, our current data structure. We're using a lot of, you know, Excel spreadsheets and things like that, but where are we headed for the future? So in the future, we don't want to wait for that next bad thing to happen, that recall or that complaint to come in. What we want to do is, you know, pour all the data into our, you know, little funnel there, and I'll explain to you what our funnel is going to look like on the next slide. But we want to put all that data in, and then we want the AI or that technology to then predict for us the next recall or complaint or poor audit result based on the information that we're feeding it. And then if we can predict, then hopefully we can prevent the next recall, complaint, poor audit result from happening. So we want to flip that funnel, and we want to feed it from the top rather than pushing it up through the bottom. So that's what AI is going to allow us to do. It's going to allow that information to flow in a different direction. And so I'm so excited, and I'm going to show you guys on this next slide what our dashboard will look like. And so, as I mentioned, we're working with a company called Intact, and they have created a dashboard. It has gone live. So I've been playing in the system a little bit. We've been providing feedback, some things that we want to see changed. And so we're in that phase of testing. And I'm, you know, very excited for it to get really rolled out, and I can start using it every day to again begin seeing some of those anomalies and things. So here's what our dashboard looks like. This is what it's going to look like when I log in each morning. And so it's going to give me some audits to review. So audits that were uploaded the week before, and it will identify two different parts to it. Okay, so there's two different parts. One are hard and fast rules that I will enter, or you know, I can change, I can add, I can take away. These are data. These are typically rules that would come off of dates. So, you know, we monitor things for compliance, such as the audit duration. And with the elimination of the audit duration table for Edition 9, that's going to be critical. So I've already told the certification bodies, I'm going to be monitoring audit duration. So I can put a rule in that says, let me know, flag me if there are any audits that are entered that have the wrong audit duration. So I can, you know, put that in as a rule. And then the second part that it's going to look at is anomaly detection. So it's going to identify audits that don't meet the norm. Okay. And it's going to ask me to review it. And then I'll make a determination whether the system was correct and whether it was a data anomaly or if something else was going on and there was a root cause to it. So it uses something called natural language processing. Okay. And so Intact will use the NLP to analyze our free text. So those non-conformances that the auditor's writing, it's going to analyze those. And it will come back and tell me if something is out of the ordinary. And then it'll get tagged. And then the expert, that's me, will validate the outcome. And as I'm validating the outcome, it's going to train the algorithm simultaneously. So the system is constantly learning, and it's learning what a normal audit would look like. And it will look at it, you know, from, you know, a normal audit for a food packaging facility is going to be different than a normal audit for a food manufacturer, for example. So, you know, things like environmental monitoring, you know, we certainly see more non-conformances in a food manufacturing audit than we would in a food packaging audit, you know, just because of the difference in the food sectors. So we're going to teach this system what a normal audit looks like so that when a non-normal audit happens, then it will flag it. And so I can look at it, and then, you know, that will eventually help us to predict, you know, where there may be a recall coming. Or it will not only look at site information, it's also going to look at auditors. So it will also look at and identify anomalies when it comes to, you know, does this one auditor always write a non-conformance in management commitment? You know, so it will learn what a normal audit looks like. And then from that, we can get a library of audit risk that we can share with our certification bodies, we can share with our auditors, you know, we can even share with our sites so that we can, you know, try to predict and hopefully eventually prevent, you know, some of the bad things from happening.
Tammy, so if I heard this correctly, you're moving away from ReposiTrak. When is SQF going to start utilizing the new tool?
Well, the great thing with this new tool is it actually works with ReposiTrak. So for those of you out there, your sites that were thinking, oh gosh, I got to learn a new system, or your auditors were like, oh, I got to know. No, it actually works with ReposiTrak. So the data will still go into ReposiTrak the same way it's always going into ReposiTrak. And then Intact will just then take it and analyze it for us. So that's a great question. It actually will work with it. So our stakeholders will not see anything new from their end. It will just be from my end. And you know, we're going to start utilizing this. Like I said, we're in the testing phase now. And so, you know, it's very close. We're very close to getting it fully implemented.
Okay, great. Do you think it's going to have any impact on the compliance program?
Oh my gosh, I am so looking forward to it. I think it's going to, you know, again, I'm still going to be the pivot table queen because I love the pivot tables. But for me, I just think it's going to allow me to analyze more data and to be able to provide more information back to our stakeholders in a more timely manner. So I am super excited about it, but I still love a good pivot table. You can better believe I'm still going to be using that. But yeah, so I see it making a huge impact on our compliance program.
Cool.
Okay. Oh, do you have another question, Paul?
Nope, that was it. No, I was just saying, cool. Thank you very much.
Good. So in summary, you know, don't wait to begin using data to predict risk. So even the simplest things you can do, okay? Get training if you needed. You know, YouTube, great resource. So if you want to learn about pivot tables, go to YouTube. You can learn about pivot tables there. So you can learn about anything on YouTube. So that's a great resource. You know, use the tools and resources available to you now, and then improve. You know, SQFI, we didn't go from paper to AI overnight. You know, we are, you know, taking it gradually, and we're, you know, riding that next wave. But, you know, start with what you have. Special software programs are nice, but start with what you have. And there's always something you can do. So, and as I mentioned previously, if you need some information on some different tools and resources and things out there, SQF Unites is happening in person in Orlando, Florida in October 27th through 29th. We've got 2.5 days planned, and we are so super excited about it. I'm on the education committee, and we have so many great sessions and keynotes that are coming up. And I'm sure Perry Johnson will be there also. I'm sure you can see Paul in Orlando as well in October. And there's going to be just lots of information. And so, yeah, I invite you all to come out and ask questions. Absolutely. We'll be there for you guys. So yeah, just wanted to throw that plug in there for SQF Unites before we get to the end here and move into our question and answers. And with that, I'm going to hand it back over to Paul.
That's great. Thank you very much. And actually, we'll move right to Amy to talk about upcoming webinars and our Q&A.
Yeah, Paul, I think you can drop the S on the end of that. There's only one left on our list. It's been wild summer and spring so far with all these webinars we've done, but we're wrapping it up for the season. We've just got one left, and that's on Thursday this week with Mitch Porsche of Compliance Metrics. So we'll hope you can all join us for that. It's free to register, as with all of our webinars. And I would love to encourage you all, if you have any ideas for other webinars you might like to see, you know, we'll probably take, you know, a month or so break from putting webinars on so we can develop our fall and winter calendar. If you have any suggestions, you know, maybe some speakers you'd like to have back, some upcoming new topics or changes in the industry that you've noticed and maybe want to see if we can develop some content on, please do absolutely drop us a line. You can email us at pgrfsi@pgrfsi.com. And we'd love to hear any suggestions or comments you might have on the webinars for either the ones we've done in the past or some suggestions for future ones. But all right, I am going to go ahead and open up the questions tab and see what we've got here. First off, I am seeing a question here about the slides. The slides, as I mentioned at the very beginning, maybe you missed it, no big deal. The slides will be available for download from the PGFSI website, and a recording of the presentation with the voiceover will also be available from our YouTube channel. And those are usually up within a couple of days, usually no later than Friday, since that's when we typically round everything up for the week. So, all right, let's see. We've got a question here, Tammy, if you want to chime in. Do you feel there are potential negatives involved with the whole prediction of risk bubble?
Well, I think with, you know, data analysis, it is very critical that at the end of the day, you still have to use some common sense when you're analyzing your data. It's nice that the computer and the system, the software is going to predict, you know, hopefully predict some things for us. But still, at the end of the day, there's got to be a person there that's taking that information and utilizing it, and it still has to be utilized in the right way. And as I said, you know, that one slide talked about the expert is still got, it still has to be there to teach the system. So we have to be very careful and make sure we're teaching the system accurately so that we will return accurate results as well. So I would caution anybody to, you know, make sure that you're using the data in the correct way.
All right, absolutely. We've got a comment and question combo here. I love the internal audit slide that uses the data to show how important it is to have an effective internal audit. And then the question is, are there any other areas within the code that you would see as an indicator of success or failure from within internal audit results?
Oh, yeah. So I spend a lot of time poring over top nonconformances, and, you know, I do trends just like the SQF code requires our certified sites to do trending, because trending is very important to answering that question. So, you know, I tend to look at the last 3 years. So I'm analyzing 2018, 2019, 2020 together. And I've got some slides that I utilize that show for like the top 10 nonconformances, the top six have been the exact same top six for all 3 years, 2018, 2019, 2020. So some of the things that pop up into that top non-conformance all the time is cleaning and sanitation is there on a regular basis. Food safety plan is there on a regular basis. And typically you will see two or three elements from the food safety plan that make it into the top non-conformances. And then major non-conformances is the same way. I think the top three for 2020 have been in the top five for the last 3 years. So, you know, it's almost like, you know, we're seeing the same things over and over again. So, if we could get sites to really focus on some of those top nonconformances that show up every year, I think we would see more of our sites, improve scores going forward. So I think there are ways to predict other than internal audits. So obviously.
All right, great. We've got a question here. All right, the company I work for has historically used paper copy of, you know, keeping records. If we were to transition into a digital format, how much historical data would you recommend we input to see trends?
Yeah, so I mentioned, you know, I'm currently using the last 3 years of data just because that was what I easily had available. That was also covering edition 8, edition 8.1, and then, you know, we'll move into edition 9 and do that comparison as well. So I'm not looking at anything before edition 8 when I'm doing my trending. Now, you know, as a certified site, there are lots of things to consider. So, you know, there are customer requirements out there on records, and how long that they want to see certain records store. Some of you may fall into regulatory requirements for records. So it really is a site having to decide, what will meet their requirements from regulatory or from a customer standpoint. For the SQF code itself, you know, we typically, our auditors will look back a year, and so it's typically looking at a year's worth of data. But if I were trending data, I'd, you know, being a somewhat of a statistician, you know, I like to have as much data as possible, but the data has to make sense, for example. So comparing 8 to 8.1 and even to some of 9 is going to be a natural progression. 7.2, I'm not comparing that just because there were some major changes from 7.2 to 8. So it wouldn't necessarily be a one-to-one comparison. So yeah, so I like to have as much as possible. But you know, if you're looking at the last, you know, 2 or 3 years, if you're trending, then I think you're probably in a good, pretty good spot.
All right, great. I think we have time for one more quick question before we wrap things up, since we're right coming up on time here. What do you think are some of the most prominent risks that businesses face today in terms of technology? And, you know, Tammy, my mind immediately goes to, you know, the recent issues with, you know, ransomware attacks and cybersecurity. Anything you would add to that list?
Exactly. No, my mind was going to go, you know, right to the same thing, because, you know, with technology, there comes extra risk, you know, and passwords stolen, and, you know, something as simple as, you know, my Facebook page got hacked a few months ago, and I'm still upset about that. But, you know, you need to make sure that you do understand those risks. And, you know, do everything you can. So like me, I was silly. I never thought anybody would care about my Facebook page. So, you know, I didn't utilize all the levels of protection that were afforded within the platform that I could have used, because I thought nobody's going to care about Tammy Van Buren's Facebook page. But obviously, you know, somebody did. You know, look at those and learn from others. So I'm sure there are a lot of companies that made changes just in the last couple of weeks based off of a couple of recent incidents that have resulted in some, you know, some computer systems being held hostage, some data being held hostage. So I would agree with you.
All right, great. If anyone had any other questions, I'm just checking to see. No, but I didn't see any more come in. But if anyone did have other questions, Tammy, did you have your contact info on the one slide at the beginning, or do you want to shout out your email address if you want questions sent to you?
I can shout out my email address. It is tvanburen@sqfi.com. And if you somehow can't get me, you don't write it down correctly, or you forget, or you think of something later and you think, I should have written her information down, you can always go to our website, sqfi.com, and you can search for me there and find my contact information, and just reach out to me, and I'll be glad to take any more additional questions.
Fantastic. Well, Tammy, thank you so much on behalf of PDRFSI. I just wanted to let you know again how grateful we are to have you on, not just once in the past month, but this is our second webinar with you in the past month, and we're very grateful to have you around to share all this great info. I will also iterate, if anyone had any questions about certification, about audits, you know, what services PDRFSI offers, you can do the same thing that Tammy suggested for SQF. You know, our website has all of the contact info you might need. You can drop us an email at pdrfsi@pdrfsi.com. Hopefully that's easy to remember. And any question will do. Audit certification, even questions about upcoming or previous webinars, we are more than happy to take any questions and get them to the right person who can get you a good answer. So anyway, as I was saying, on behalf of PDRFSI, thank you to everyone who took the time to attend. Hope you have a great rest of your week, and hopefully we'll see you on that last webinar we've got scheduled on Thursday. And if not, have a great rest of your day.